Welcome to the briefing by the IP Law Blog. My name is Scott Hervey. I'm a partner in the Los Angeles office of Weintraub Tobin.
My name is Josh Escobedo, and I'm an associate in the Sacramento office of Weintraub Tobin.
Today we're going to talk about sushi, namely hand rolls. No, actually we're going to talk about a trademark case that's percolating its way up through the district court, the Central District in California. It's actually, it involves, the plaintiff is a sushi titan, Sushi Nozawa, versus kind of a startup newcomer to the gourmet sushi space here in California, the HRB Experience. Josh, why don't you give us a discussion of the status of the pleadings and the facts?
Sure. So I ran into this case the other day. It came up and there was sushi involved. There were trademarks involved. I figured, why not?
It's your omakase.
So I moved into reviewing the complaint. I saw that Sushi Nozawa, one of my favorite sushi places in probably the country, filed an action against the HRB Experience, whom I hadn't heard of until the filing of this complaint. But I know I talked to you, Scott, and you said that they have a location right down from our office, and it's pretty good. So it looks like Sushi Nozawa was irked by HRB Experience's use of the mark, the hand roll bar experience. And Sushi Nozawa has two registered marks. One is for the original hand roll bar, and the other is for the original hand roll bar founded 2014 Los Angeles. So they filed suit claiming that the HRB Experience infringed the rights of Sushi Nozawa and their registered trademarks. And the HRB Experience, obviously disagreeing, filed a motion to dismiss. I think really this case centers on the strength of the marks. Wouldn't you say, Scott?
Yes, I agree. I think this case will and does revolve around the strength of the Formatives hand roll bar. And it's interesting, one of the things you noted in our previous discussion is that when Sushi Nozawa originally filed their two trademarks, it was filed on the supplemental register. Now the supplemental register, it's a register that is, we have the principal register and the supplemental register. And the supplemental register is reserved for marks that are deemed to be merely descriptive. That's kind of the low point on the scale of distinctiveness for trademarks. Below descriptive, you have generic. And those are terms that can never, ever function as a trademark. In trademark law, a mark is deemed to have acquired secondary meaning when certain things happen. And in the Trademark Act, it's deemed to have acquired secondary meaning when it's been in use for more than 5 years. Now, Sushi Nozawa could have filed a new trademark registration application for registration on the principal register. And that would have been, if they would have got it, they would have avoided what they're likely going to face in this case, which is having to prove by introducing evidence, substantial evidence, that their mark has acquired secondary meaning. Any thoughts, Josh, as to why they might not have filed that trademark seeking registration on the principal register?
I think it's possible that they may have been fearful of what the USPTO's examining attorney may have said. I think anytime your mark gets passed before an examining attorney, I think some of us wonder what, or hope at least, that they're going to be in a good mood when they're reviewing our mark, because they can be somewhat subjective from time to time. And so maybe they didn't want to run the risk of having their mark deemed generic by the trademark office, because they'd previously been deemed descriptive. Yeah. Of course, they're going to have to do that dance with the judge as well, because I'm sure the HRB Experience is going to be saying, your mark's generic. It's not even titled to trademark protection. And even if it is descriptive, it's not entitled to protection because it hasn't acquired secondary meaning. And of course, Sushi Nozawa is going to be defending their position to the end.
Yeah, I agree with you, Josh. I think it very well could have been a strategy that Nozawa's trademark attorneys devised. Because it's one thing to fight a generic claim or fight a claim that your mark has not acquired a secondary meaning or have become distinctiveness in litigation, right? Their litigations usually settle, and that settlement usually doesn't include some type of capitulation that your mark has no trademark strength. But you can't settle with an examining attorney that issues a refusal to register your mark because it's generic. The only thing you can do is argue with them, appeal the decision to the TTAB, and then appeal that decision to the Federal Circuit. So you are limited. So I do agree. I think it was a, I think they may have recognized the possible weakness of their trademark and decided that it was a better thing to fight it in court than fight it at the TTAB or Federal Circuit.
Right. And I think you alluded to another good point there. It's that the attorneys probably recognize that even though they're now involved in litigation, it's probably not going to make it to a judgment. It's going to settle it somewhere along the road. And at that point, they won't have to worry about a determination as to whether their mark is generic or descriptive. They'll have defended their mark and they'll have obtained some form of settlement. Whether it's favorable or not remains to be seen, but they'll obtain a, some sort of agreement and they won't have their mark ruled upon by a trier of fact, whether that's a TTAB administrative judge, an examining attorney, or a federal court judge.
Right, right. Well, to me, when I looked at this, it seemed like a case that was destined to be resolved by a trier of fact. It's going to be resolved based on a determination of strength of the words handlebar. So if that's the case, Josh, as the litigator in the pack, why did they file, why did the defendants file this motion to dismiss? Why do you think?
Well, because the defendants understand that even though the case law is such that generally decisions on likelihood of confusion aren't made at the pleading stage because there are a number of factors that we analyze under the Sleekcraft Boats case. And in doing so, there has to be some factual analysis there in most instances. But the case law says if the marks are dissimilar enough, the judge can rule as a matter of law. But I think what defendants had to be thinking here was that if we get past this stage, it's going to be a very expensive piece of litigation. And so if there is a slight chance that we can convince the trier of fact to dismiss this as a matter of law, we should at least take a swing. Worst case scenario, we miss and we move forward into the expensive litigation as is.
My hypothesis is that they wanted to set the tone and get the judge starting to think about the strength of Nozawa's mark. I think they may have accomplished that. Even though they lost, I think they may have accomplished that with this motion to dismiss. So
right.
We'll see what comes in the next course. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this installment of the briefing by the IP Law Blog. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, visit our YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe to that as well, and check out our website at theiplawblog.com. Thanks.